Welcome to the debate. Right now, there is a parallel justice system in the United States, just hiding in plain sight.
Hiding behind a mound of paperwork, really.
Exactly. I mean, it is an apparatus that holds over $30 billion in combined assets. But to access it, dying workers have to navigate this intricate administrative labyrinth.
Right, a labyrinth built from the remains of the very companies that poisoned them. And, I mean, we are not talking about a small niche operation here.
No, not at all.
There are over 60 active trust funds out there today. These were established by former industrial titans, you know, companies like Johns Manville, Armstrong World Industries, Owens Corning, and W.R. Grace.
Yeah, we are looking at a system born out of absolute necessity. It deals with one of the most complex legal challenges of our time, which is the asbestos crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So today we are evaluating the underlying nature and the true efficacy of this mechanism. The central question is whether the asbestos trust fund system represents, you know, a triumph of efficient administrative justice that guarantees swift compensation.
Or whether it functions primarily as this rigidly constrained damage-limiting mechanism that basically shields corporations from full liability.
Right, because that tension is exactly where we need to focus today.
Yeah, we are looking at a framework that fundamentally altered how the American legal system actually quantifies and compensates severe human suffering.
So let's establish exactly how we got here, because, I mean, the historical context is crucial for understanding why this system operates the way it does. Back in the 1980s and 90s, the manufacturers of asbestos products were facing an absolute avalanche of litigation.
Oh, completely unprecedented.
Yeah, we are talking about mass tort resolution on a massive scale. And just to be clear on terms, a mass tort simply means a massive number of civil lawsuits filed by many different people against one or several companies for a single widespread wrongful act.
In this case, decades of asbestos exposure.
Exactly.
Right. And the latency period for diseases like mesothelioma or severe asbestosis, it can be 20 to 50 years.
Which is terrifying, really.
It is. So you had millions of workers exposed in the mid-20th century who were all suddenly getting sick and filing lawsuits at the exact same time. The companies were just completely overwhelmed.
And that overwhelming volume created a terrifying alternative to the system we have today. I mean, if a company like Johns Manville just went through standard liquidation, selling off all their factories and equipment, the immediate victims might have gotten pennies on the dollar.
If that, right. And future victims, the people who wouldn't get sick until, say, 2015 or 2025, they would get absolutely nothing, a complete zero.
Which is a massive failure of justice.
Exactly. So instead, federal bankruptcy courts stepped in. They allowed these companies to reorganize, but mandated that they create these massive trust funds, over $30 billion structurally protected and dedicated solely to compensating current and future victims.
Look, I understand the historical reality. It was a necessary intervention to prevent total financial liquidation where victims got nothing.
Right.
But, you know, necessary does not automatically mean optimal. And we really shouldn't confuse a corporate bankruptcy strategy with a purely victim-centric justice system.
Well, how can you not see it as victim-centric? Because when you look closely at the mechanics of these trusts, they represent a massive bureaucratic bottleneck.
A bottleneck? I mean, how can you call $30 billion a bottleneck?
Because of the stark contrast in what victims actually recover. That's why. If you look at the data in the source material, the difference is just glaring. When victims take solvent defendants to court, meaning companies that are still actively in business and haven't used bankruptcy to reorganize those lawsuits, average payouts of $1 million to $1.4 million.
Sure, but those are...
sometimes significantly more, actually. But in contrast, individual trust funds cap their payouts at a fraction of that, typically ranging from a mere $7,000 to maybe $200,000. We basically traded the judicial reckoning of a courtroom for an assembly line of heavily discounted payouts.
I think you are jumping straight to the final dollar amounts without looking at the mechanism that delivers them, which is honestly where the true value of the system lies.
The value is in the payout, isn't it?
Not just the payout, the speed. Let's look at the systemic advantage of the process itself.
If you are a terminal mesothelioma patient, your life expectancy is often measured in months, maybe a year or two if you're lucky. A traditional court battle against a solvent defendant takes 1 to 3 years.
It is long, yes. I'll grant you that.
It is practically a lifetime for someone with this diagnosis. The trust funds, on the other hand, offer this expedited review process. Claims are typically processed in just 3 to 6 months.
3 to 6 months, assuming everything is perfect.
But think of the trust system almost like a no-fault insurance payout. It intentionally removes the friction of proving corporate liability in front of a jury, which, you know, takes years, involves grueling depositions, and costs an absolute fortune in legal fees.
Right.
It trades that drawn-out fight for rapid, guaranteed distribution of funds to the sick. For a family facing hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical debt, that speed is tangible relief.
Okay, but calling it a no-fault insurance payout implies a level of ease and accessibility that simply doesn't exist here. You are presenting the 3 to 6 month timeline as if it's some frictionless transaction.
It is infinitely smoother than a trial.
But let's look at what the trust distribution procedures, or TDPs, actually demand of these victims. The TDP is essentially this incredibly strict actuarial rulebook that governs every single payout. It dictates exactly what a victim must prove to get a check.
Well, yeah, it requires proof of exposure and a medical diagnosis, which is entirely standard.
Standard is doing a lot of heavy lifting there.
I mean, if the trust just handed out money without verifying anything, that $30 billion would vanish in a year.
Yes, but let's detail what proof actually means under a TDP in steps 1 and 2 of the filing process. It is an exhaustive documentation requirement. Victims must produce Social Security earning statements, union dispatch records, and highly detailed employment histories spanning decades.
To prove they were actually there.
Right, but imagine this. If you worked as a pipe fitter in the Brooklyn Navy Yard in 1974, you are now being asked to forensically reconstruct your work history and explicitly link it to a specific bankrupt company's product while your body is actively failing you from a terminal illness.
But that forensic reconstruction, as you call it, replaces the need to be cross-examined by aggressive defense attorneys in a courtroom.
It shifts the burden entirely onto the shoulders of the sick person through paperwork. And the medical criteria are just as rigid. They have to produce precise pathology reports and specific B-reads of chest x-rays that meet the exact criteria of each unique trust's matrix.
Which establishes the severity of the claim?
But if your pathology report doesn't perfectly align with the specific TDP's definition of your disease level, you get nothing. Zero. It is an exhausting assembly line of proof.
I think we need to look at why that matrix exists rather than just dismissing it as an exhausting assembly line. The matrix is a feature of efficiency. Under a TDP, diseases are categorized into levels. Mesothelioma is typically the highest level, say level 8.
Right.
And severe asbestosis might be level 4. Each level has a scheduled value, a predetermined dollar amount the trust has decided that specific illness is worth. By standardizing this, the trust eliminates the need to individually argue the severity of every single claim in front of a judge.
Mathematically, sure.
If your medical records hit the criteria for level 8, you are guaranteed the scheduled value for level 8. The documentation, while rigorous, is exactly what allows the administrative process to safely replace the courtroom trial.
Guaranteed the scheduled value. Let's pause right there because this is where the system's architecture truly reveals its nature. This brings us to the concept of the payment percentage, which is arguably the most critical and honestly devastating mechanism in the entire trust system. I want to walk through how this math actually works for a victim.
Go ahead, because I think the payment percentage is exactly what ensures the system's survival.
Let's say a victim does everything perfectly. They dig up their union records from 1974, they get the exact pathology report, they qualify for a level 8 mesothelioma claim.
Okay.
The trust schedule says level 8 is valued at, say, $100,000. The victim thinks they are getting $100,000, but the trust operates under a predetermined payment percentage.
To preserve its assets for future claims.
Exactly. To preserve its assets, the trust mathematically mandates that it will only pay out a tiny fraction of that scheduled value. If a trust's payment percentage is set at 7%, that victim doesn't get $100,000. they get $7,000 for a terminal illness caused by corporate negligence.
Which, I agree, it sounds jarring in a vacuum, but explain why that 7% exists. We are dealing with finite resources against a tragically ongoing multi-generational wave of disease.
But the impact on the individual.
Let me finish this point. If the trust paid 100% of the scheduled value to the victim's filing claims today, the entire fund would be bankrupt again within a few years. What happens to the worker who was exposed in 1988 but won't develop symptoms until 2028?
They would be out of luck.
They get zero. So the payment percentage isn't a penalty. It is an act of sustainable allocation. It ensures the trust survives for the 40-plus years it takes for asbestos diseases to finish manifesting in the population.
I understand the actuarial math. I really do. But we have to look at the human impact of that math. Because of that 7% payout, to achieve anything remotely resembling a just settlement, to get anywhere near the $1.4 million average of a traditional lawsuit, a victim is forced to play a complex, exhausting game of volume.
A game of volume?
Yes. They cannot rely on the single entity that harmed them to pay a fair share. Instead, they are forced to engage in a scavenger hunt, filing multiple claims across various trusts simultaneously. They have to piece together a fragmented puzzle of liability, you know, grabbing $7,000 here, $12,000 there, $50,000 from another, just to cover their basic medical bills.
Wait. Calling it a scavenger hunt completely mischaracterizes the reality of industrial work in the 20th century.
How so?
This volume of claims you are talking about, what the industry calls stacking claims, is not an arbitrary game. It is a highly accurate reflection of historical exposure. The material specifically highlights that workers in industries like shipbuilding, construction, and manufacturing were almost never exposed to just one company's products.
True, the asbestos exposure was often widespread across a single job site.
Exactly. Let's go back to your example of a pipe fitter in a shipyard. Over a 30-year career, that pipe fitter wasn't just handling Johns Manville insulation. They were cutting Armstrong floor tiles, using Owens Corning materials, and working near W.R. Grease fireproofing sprays.
Right.
Their disease wasn't caused by one single fiber from one single company. It was the cumulative burden of all those exposures. The trust system's design elegantly accounts for this. It allows that worker to be compensated by every single responsible party whose product they encountered.
But the effort required to prove that,
when a victim's compensation accumulates to $500,000 or $1 million through 10 different trusts, that isn't a fragmented puzzle. That is liability apportioned exactly as it occurred in the real world. Stacking is a feature of comprehensive justice, not a bug.
But you are assuming a level of seamlessness that the administrative reality completely betrays. Yes, they were exposed to multiple products, but functionally, you are forcing a dying worker to fight a multi-front administrative war.
It's an administrative process, yes.
But they aren't just proving they were sick. They have to individually litigate, administratively speaking, against 10 different bankrupt entities, meeting 10 entirely different sets of TDPs and matrices just to aggregate a normal settlement amount. That is inherently defensive design. It is designed to protect the remaining assets of the trusts, not to make the victim whole in a straightforward manner.
And that is precisely why victims retain specialized mesothelioma attorneys. The attorneys handle the dual-track process. Steps 3 and 4 of the trust framework, identifying all the applicable trusts and submitting the perfectly formatted claims, are handled by the legal team, not the patient sitting in a hospital bed.
The legal team does the filing, absolutely. But the burden of providing the raw material for those claims, the memory of which shipyard, which specific year, which specific brand of insulation was used on a boiler in 1978, still falls on the victim.
Well, they are the only ones who have that knowledge.
Right. And this brings us to a foundational discrepancy that we really need to unpack. The system you are praising has effectively created a glaring double standard, a two-tiered justice system in the United States.
Explain the double standard, because from where I sit, the systems complement each other perfectly.
Think about the divide between solvent and bankrupt companies. On one side, you have solvent companies. If their product harms you, they face full legal accountability. You take them to court, you have the weight of the judicial system behind you, you have the threat of a jury to force fair settlements, and you see average payouts well over $1 million.
Sure, the traditional tort system.
Right. But on the other side, you have the companies that arguably caused the most widespread, devastating damage. The ones that were so negligent and poisoned so many people that they faced literal bankruptcy from the sheer volume of claims.
The worst offenders, essentially.
Exactly. Yet these absolute worst offenders are now shielded behind the administrative walls of the trusts. Their liability is strictly capped by payment percentages. The most culpable actors effectively hid in bankruptcy and bought their way out of the courtroom.
I have to reject the premise that they are hiding, or that this is some sort of either-or scenario. You are overlooking the most crucial operational rule detailed in our material.
Which is?
The text is entirely explicit on this point. Trust fund payments are in addition to, not instead of, any lawsuit settlements or verdicts.
I am aware they operate simultaneously.
But that simultaneity is everything. Filing trust claims and pursuing litigation against solvent defendants are separate, parallel processes. Receiving a $7,000 check from a bankrupt trust does not extinguish your right to sue a solvent company in court.
No, legally it doesn't.
So if victims retain their full, unmitigated right to take solvent actors to trial, and on top of that, we have injected an additional guaranteed $30 billion into a parallel track that pays out in a matter of months, how can you view that as anything other than a net positive? They aren't losing their day in court. They are getting the courtroom, plus the administrative trusts.
Because you are treating the bankrupt companies as if they are just bonus money, rather than the primary perpetrators of the harm. Yes, legally, receiving a trust payment doesn't bar you from suing a completely different solvent defendant.
Right.
But for the specific localized harm caused by the bankrupt entity, the Johns Millvilles of the world, the accountability is fractionalized and permanently capped. A victim can never stand in a courtroom, point a finger at the corporate entity that manufactured the specific insulation that gave them mesothelioma, and demand a public accounting.
Because that entity no longer exists in the way it did when the harm occurred. It was fundamentally restructured by a federal judge.
But the mechanism matters. By routing the worst offenders through the trust system, the administrative process inherently privatizes and sanitizes the corporate wrongdoing. It turns a profound moral failing, knowingly exposing workers to a deadly carcinogen, into an actuarial spreadsheet calculation.
It turns it into a manageable process.
The company never has to face a jury. They just let the trust distribute pennies on the dollar based on a rigid matrix.
I understand the desire for a public accounting. I do. There is a deep human need for a reckoning when a wrong has been committed. But we have to ask what justice actually looks like in practice rather than in theory.
I'd argue justice in practice looks like a jury verdict against the company that harmed you.
But for a family watching their primary earner go through chemotherapy facing immediate financial ruin, the spreadsheet calculation that delivers actual funds in 3 to 6 months is arguably far more valuable than the symbolic victory of a public trial 3 years down the line, especially when, given the nature of the disease, the victim might not even live to see the verdict read.
That is a harsh reality.
It is. It trades the theatrical public accounting for guaranteed rapid financial support.
Look, I don't disagree that the immediate financial relief is critical. But we must be honest about the cost of that transaction. When you institute a system that relies on 7% payment percentages and incredibly dense procedural hurdles to ration out $30 billion, you are fundamentally setting a hard, systemic ceiling on the valuation of a human life.
It's a compromise, yes.
It is a pragmatic compromise, certainly. It is better than total liquidation. But to elevate it to a triumph of justice feels like a massive overstatement of the system's virtues and a dangerous underestimation of its profound compromises. It is a system that protects corporate assets just as much, if not more, than it advocates for the full restitution of the victims.
And I would counter that pragmatism in the face of mass terminal illness and the absolute chaos of corporate insolvency is the highest form of justice we can realistically achieve. The trusts ensure that the concept of compensation outlives the companies themselves and outlives the immediate crisis.
Well, they certainly outlived the victims.
Let's reflect on where we've arrived in this analysis. In my view, the asbestos trust framework represents an optimal, albeit hard-won, balance. It successfully rescued tens of billions of dollars that would have otherwise vanished in bankruptcy court.
Mm-hmm.
It engineered a 3 to 6 month administrative fast track that seamlessly runs parallel to traditional litigation. By allowing victims to simultaneously pursue solvent defendants in court and stack multiple trust claims based on the reality of their workplace exposure, the system maximizes total compensation while fiercely respecting the incredibly urgent timeline of a terminal diagnosis.
And while I acknowledge the undeniable value of preserving that $30 billion pool, I maintain that we must view the mechanics of the system with a highly critical eye. It fundamentally replaced full judicial accountability with a regimented, low-ceiling administrative process.
Right.
The strict trust distribution procedures and the brutal math of payment percentages force sick victims to piece together fractional payouts from multiple sources. It transforms a devastating health crisis into an exhausting exercise in bureaucratic compliance.
I think we can both agree that navigating asbestos compensation requires a victim to operate simultaneously in two vastly different paradigms. On one hand, you have the administrative, actuarial logic of the trusts, focused on sustainable allocation and disease matrices.
Exactly. And on the other, you have the adversarial, punitive arena of the traditional courts, focused on liability and juries.
Absolutely.
And the tension between those two tracks, how they interact, how they demand different types of evidence, and how they ultimately quantify human health, it invites a much deeper exploration into the mechanics of our legal system. It reveals what happens when tort law gives way to administrative management.
It really does. It forces us to ask what justice really looks like when time is the ultimate enemy. When the timeline is compressed by a terminal diagnosis, does justice look like a gavel coming down in a courtroom years too late? Or does it look like a quiet administrative check arriving just in time, even if it's for a fraction of the value? We will leave that for you, the listener, to decide.